Today we're going to be talking about the Great Compromise of 1787. The Great Compromise was forged in a heated dispute during the 1787 Constitutional Convention. This was a convention where 12 of the 13 states met to discuss how they were going to form our nation's or our new nation's government. States with larger populations wanted congressional representation based on population, while smaller states demanded equal representation. To keep the convention from dissolving into chaos, founding fathers came up with the Great Compromise. The agreement created today's system of congressional representation. At the Constitutional Convention of 1787, delegates from larger states believed each state's representation in the newly proposed Senate should be proportionate to populations, meaning that larger states should have more votes because more people live in it. Smaller states with lower populations argued that such an arrangement would lead to an unfair dominance of larger states in the new nation's government, and each state should have equal representation, regardless of the population. That way, none of the smaller states would be bullied and not have a voice in the government. The disagreement over representation threatened to derail the ratification of the U.S. Constitution, since delegates from both sides of the dispute vowed to reject the document if they didn't get their way. The solution came in the form of a compromise proposed by statesman Roger Sherman of Connecticut. Also known as the Sherman Compromise or the Connecticut Compromise, the deal combined proposals from the Virginia and the New Jersey plans. The Virginia plan was for the large states where it supported representation based on population. The New Jersey plan was for the small states where it was based on equal representation. The Great Compromise basically just combined the two. According to the Great Compromise, there would be two national legislatures and a bicameral Congress. Everyone agreed to Sherman's plan, and the Constitution was ratified. The Constitution created a bicameral national legislature. That is, a Congress composed of two separate chambers, the Senate and the House of Representatives. Members of the House of Representatives would be allocated according to each state's population and elected by the people. The House of Representatives, also known as the lower house, is much larger. Currently, it has 435 seats, and its members serve much shorter terms, only 2 years. Representation in the House is proportional to population, so larger states receive many more seats than do smaller states. In the second body, the Senate, each state would have two representatives regardless of the state's size, and state legislatures would choose senators. But in 1913, the 17th Amendment was passed, tweaking the system so that senators would also be elected by the people. The Senate, sometimes called the upper house, is smaller, currently 100 seats. And its members serve longer terms. Right now it's 6 years. Each state, no matter how large or small, has equal representation, meaning 2 seats each. 50 states in the U.S., 50 times 2 is 100 in the Senate. Both houses have unique powers and responsibilities, but for the most part, the House and the Senate work in tandem, work in parallel. That's to say, senators and congressmen perform broadly similar functions of the national government. Both houses have to pass any piece of proposed legislation for it to become law. This House and the Senate are arguably redundant institutions. Why then did the Constitution create a bicameral legislature? Why not merge the House and the Senate into one? There are three main reasons. The first was a matter of historical precedent. While the American colonists had rebelled against British rule in the Revolutionary War, they still drew many of their ideas about government from their colonial experience as British subjects. And the British had a parliament, which had also two houses, an upper chamber, the House of Lords, full of representatives of the aristocracy, and a lower chamber, the House of Commons, full of representatives of the ordinary people. That example shaped the thinking of our Constitution's framers. The second was more theoretical. The framers' emphasis on the idea of checks and balances led them to be suspicious that a unicameral legislature might consolidate too much power in one institution. By dividing the power between the House and the Senate, the two chambers would serve as checks against each other's authority, thus theoretically preventing one part of our government having too much power. The third, and by far the most important, was a matter of practical politics. The Constitutional Convention included delegates from 12 of the original 13 states. Rhode Island was the one who boycotted. Those delegates came from small states and large states. The small states, afraid of losing influence in the new government, demanded that representation be awarded on an equal basis, no matter how large or small. But the large states insisted that representation would be based on population, since larger states had more voters. We have to have more votes in Congress, too. This fierce dispute over representation dragged on throughout the summer, threatening to derail the whole Constitutional Convention. Now, the bicameral legislature provided the perfect opportunity for compromise. In fact, for the great compromise, small states got their equal representation, and large states got their proportional representation. And everybody went home happy.